an after-dinner speaker, a master of ceremonies, kind of the George Jessel of the bird world. Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also comment on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@WAMC.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray. Good to be here. Thank you.
It's only been a few weeks since you've been on.
Time flies, doesn't it?
I love it. The more bird shows, the better. We'll start right out with an email. This one came in before the show started. Oh, like over an hour ago.
Uh-huh.
Heather from Remsen. Okay? She was very...
That's...
out by Utica way.
Yes, it is. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to place it.
And she has an interesting question here. Question for the bird guy. That's the subject heading. That's you. 3 years in a row in April, I've had a northern flicker come to my yard and peck the ground for only a few hours. This is the only time I have seen him. Since he does the same thing in the exact same spot every April for the same amount of time, is it likely the same bird? And that's from Heather in Remsen.
Very likely. As with most birds, the migrating birds will return to the same spot year after year. As long as they live and they're not booted out by competition or the habitat changes, they'll come back.
Just to one spot for a couple of hours
and
then go away.
Well, it depends on the bird. Whatever attracted the flicker, which is a type of woodpecker, that actually feeds on the ground for about as much time as he feeds on the side of a tree.
Huh.
They have a liking for ants and other ground critters, especially ants, but... So they will work an anthill until they're satisfied or the anthill is depleted or they find a better anthill someplace else.
Well, so then we can infer some level of intelligence that the bird has a memory capable of saying, oh, well, there are good ants here.
It's very true. Birds learn. Well, first of all, one thing about birds, as I mentioned, that they do return to where they were born. And the formula behind that, if it worked for them, it will work for their offspring.
Yeah.
So it was a good spot then. It's a good spot now, provided things don't change. Mm. And, you know, the most dramatic change is habitat loss. If they like a particular kind of habitat and it gets bulldozed over or cut down or logged out or disappears in one fashion or another, flooded, burned, they'll move on. They'll find another suitable place.
Huh.
But if nothing changes... That robin that raised that hatched out in the apple tree will be back to that apple tree in the next year. If the parent birds are still there, because the parent will still return. But
how long will a bird live?
Well, it's a good question. If you take into account right from pipping at the egg, hatching out, fledgling, nestling, fledgling, learning, migration, return. The average lifespan of a bird is about 3 years.
Okay.
That includes all of those factors. But once a bird is successfully fledged and can migrate, which is not an easy task, they got to go 1,000 miles, some of them, and return, then they can live 5, 6, 8, 10 years, depending on a bird. Usually it's proportional to size. Bigger birds live longer, little birds, not quite.
All right, well, let's head to the phones here. We have a full bank of calls at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and let's go over to Nina in East Hoosick. Nina.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Rich, I just have to follow up on the flicker story. I have an identical story, and I live in East Hoosick, New York, so I'm so happy to hear that other story. I've also seen eagles and wonderful pileated woodpecker. The reason I'm calling is this. I have a pair of binoculars, which I inherited from my father, and they're foggy, and I can't, you know, take out that exterior part. I need to get it cleaned. My local optometrist in Bennington, Vermont, which is closest to where I am, he doesn't know how to do it. He couldn't recommend any place that would do it, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about how to clean the binoculars and or where I can go to get it done. That's my question.
Okay, well, it's not an easy answer because most binoculars of the new sort, I have a relatively, actually not anymore, new pair of Swarovski binoculars, and that company, I have to say, takes, and so does Leica and Nikon and some of the others. They will take care of their brand. They do a good job of repair and maintenance for their binoculars. But the older binoculars are sort of hard to come by an adequate and capable repair facility. I will suggest that there is an old a business that's been handling this for a long, long time. They have the equipment to do the old binoculars, and I'll give you the name and let you do the research from there yourself, just so you'll have a chance to have a look at what they have to offer. And it's called Mirakel. I'll spell that. It's M-I-R-A-K-E-L, Optical, Mirakel Optical. And if you go online and go to their webpage, you'll see what services they have to offer, repair, servicing, maintenance.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Okay. I really appreciate it. I love this show.
They will also tell you whether the pair of binoculars is beyond.
Whether it's worth it to fix them.
Right. So they'll give you an honest answer to
so
that.
So why does an old pair of binoculars get cloudy? Is it cataracts?
Maybe they've just been sitting around. They absorbing moisture,
yeah.
Or the coating on the lenses may have become compromised in some fashion. So old pairs of binoculars, some of them are very, very good. I know I have an old pair of Leica binoculars that goes back, it's probably about World War II.
Wow.
And I loan them out when I'm on field trips because they are still good. They're still quality optics.
All right, let's go over to Fred and Hurley. Fred, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, thank you. And hi, Rich. I have 80 birds that come through my property and all that. I had this one bird come through a couple weeks ago, and it was sort of like a woodpecker, not a flicker. I did some research in Sibley's, and it seemed to be a yellow-bellied sapsucker, but the belly was totally green.
Right.
Cool.
Is that?
Well, it depends on how green is.
I mean, it was green. I mean, it was like, and the stripe is definitely a yellow-bellied sapsucker stripe on the top of the head.
Okay, I
was like, is this a new kind of woodpecker?
Not likely. The sapsucker is a type of woodpecker, as you mentioned, and they get their name because they go around the tree drilling little holes and waiting for the sap to flow out. And when that does, they lap up the sap, and they also will feast on any of the insects that are drawn to the sweet sap of the tree. So they like a soft bark. Easy-flowing trees such as birches and apples and maples and alike. They drill these horizontal rows along the trunk of the tree.
Now the green belly?
Well, the green belly part is what throws me off because, as the name suggests, even though it's somewhat misleading, it is called a yellow-bellied sapsucker for a reason.
Right.
And because it's yellow. The green part, I don't understand. Probably may have picked up some sort of mossy stain.
It was pretty throughout. It wasn't, you know, maybe it rolled in it. I don't know.
How green is green? What other?
I mean, it was
Kelly green,
it wasn't
or
yellow.
Moss green, or
British Racing green.
It was evenly green all the way across.
Okay. Any chance you could get a photograph of this guy?
He was in and out.
In and out. Okay, that's what happens. Yeah.
And I didn't have a chance to take a picture.
Huh. And I'm trying. My mind is racing to see if I could come up with another kind of woodpecker that would be green underneath, and nothing comes to mind. There are woodpeckers that are red underneath, and actually blue underneath. Green. Huh. I'm going to work on that. If something pops up in my mind, I'll bring it back up again. But I'm going to stick with yellow-bellied sapsucker because that's the most likely candidate. The green part.
Yeah, the stripe on the head was definitely a yellow-bellied sapsucker stripe.
Okay.
You know, but the belly was definitely green.
I got you. And
all right.
Too bad.
Well, that's Fred. That's a great call. You've stumped Rich already. We can stop the show.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well done.
Well done, Fred. Stop Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. Now, I mean, it could be a mutant, right?
But color turns green. I don't know that there is a very, very rare, very seldom heard of condition where green color will predominate, will somehow come through. But that's so unusual.
So could this be one of those rare occasions when, in fact, it is a bird that we have never seen before?
No.
What do you mean, no?
No.
How do you discover new things?
Well, not in Hurley, New York.
Okay, now that's a shot at Hurley, New York.
Well, not Hurley, New York, East Hurley or South Hurley.
How do you know? I mean, how do you discover things if you don't see something for the first time?
Well, we didn't get a picture, so it will just have to be.
Now you're saying Fred is making it up.
No, I'm not. I'm saying Fred saw a bird with a green belly now and a sapsucker with a green belly, just a green belly sapsucker. I'm going to open up my Sibley guide.
Yeah, why don't you do that? We're going to take a break.
And look for another, and it ain't going to happen.
All right, you have 90 seconds. We'll take a break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and we will be back with Rich Guthrie in a moment.
Comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. Northshire Bookstore, presenting Joe Page, author of Preaching in My Yes Dress, on April 23rd, 7 p.m. in Saratoga Springs, New York. Northshire.com. Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Emmanuel Ax, the legendary pianist closes the season with an all Beethoven program, Sunday, April 24th, 3 p.m. UnionCollegeConcerts.org. Curtis Lumber, providing home improvement products and advice to homeowners and contractors, supporting local communities for over a century. CurtisLumber.com. And Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. You know, Rich, you should really not be calling Fred from Hurley a liar in the break.
Oh, no, not at all.
That was an awful thing to do.
Not at all.
Oh, you weren't?
The bird is a liar.
No?
The bird is the one that's misleading.
You know, I think you have a brand new, you pulled out the Sibley's book, and there's nothing in there.
There's nope.
Okay, so this is a brand new form of bird.
It's missed opportunities. Fred's, we had a chance, and we'll just have to put more apple trees out there and hope that sapsucker comes back. Well, we did look in the Sibley Guide.
Right.
And National Geographic Guide. And there is a sapsucker of the Southwest called the Williamson sapsucker.
Right.
That has a greenish tinge rather than a yellowish tinge.
Yeah.
It's as far as we can go.
So, I mean, it could lose its way, right?
Oh, birds do that.
Took a ride to Texas, and there you go.
There are birds do that. And this is one of the things that we're always out there looking for is birds that are off course and out of their range. And Williamson sapsucker in New York, oh, that would be a... That would be an extraordinary event.
This one came in via email from Jerry, who says, until recently, I lived in a rural setting where goldfinch visited my feeders frequently. I now live in Rhinebeck Village, but haven't seen a single goldfinch, even at my Niger seed feeder. Is there anything I can do to attract these birds, or do they simply not visit villages rather than stay on the outskirts?
They need to find you, and
okay.
That may take time. This morning, I was watching hordes of goldfinches at my bird feeders, and it's not that I live in a country. I live in a small hamlet with, so it's not a question of their not liking villages. It's a question of them locating you. Once they do, you'll be their new best friend.
Okay, let's go back to the phones, and over on line four, I believe, is Jim in Millbrook. Jim, you're next.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, can birds smell? I'm pretty sure a vulture can smell. That's probably how it locates its food. But I'm really wondering about songbirds, and in particular a bluebird, because I've had very bad luck with my bluebird houses being raided by raccoons every year. And there's one house on a pole, which I put like tree tanglefoot sticky stuff on rent, and that worked. The coons didn't get to it, except that often it's not a bluebird that nests there. It's a tree swallow. I have another house that's in the middle of a very brambly, tangly rose bush, And I was hoping that would suffice, but last year it didn't. The raccoon got the nest. So what I'm wondering is, if I spray that bush with the kind of repellent that I'm pretty sure would keep the raccoons away, would it also deter the birds,
well,
which I don't want to do?
I hear you. Birds do not smell. You're correct about the vulture
really?
Having a sense of smell. No, birds don't smell.
Well, chicken smells delicious.
only when done well.
Okay. All right.
But birds do not have a sense of smell, so far as we know. And I think that's been tested again and again in various laboratory settings that have pretty well determined that. Now, as far as the nesting, the bluebird nest boxes, the best deterrent for protection against raccoons and other predators would be some sort of a metal guard around the pole of the nest box so that they can't get a grip and climb up. A baffle such as an inverted cone on
right.
the pole would deter any of these climbing predators from getting at it.
Yeah, I just don't think I can get one on this thing. It's in the middle of a very thick rose bush, which I just clip away enough so that the box is clear.
Yeah.
And that would be hard to baffle it. Even if I did, they could probably climb up the rose bush.
That's
get
correct.
Around it.
So there's another technique that you can use. And if you go to the Bluebird Society webpage, you'll find that they will have another possible solution that you could put to work. And that is a sort of an extension to the hole that makes it.
I've done that. At least I've done it with like just a 1-inch thick piece of wood extension. And I also bought this rather elaborately designed 2 or 3 inch extension that is, it's probably made in China. It's hard, I don't know what it's made out of, metal or pewter or something. And it's designed to look like, it's painted to look like natural wood. But the birds will not use it except for the house wren, which is just such a pest as far as I'm concerned anyway.
Okay, well, take another look at the Bluebird Society webpage. And
okay.
They have had techniques that have been successful in deterring not only raccoons but also other birds from moving into a bluebird nest box. So,
okay, but I don't have to worry about the bluebird smelling whatever I spray the bush with.
Right, and I would strongly urge you not to use that sticky stuff again because some birds will get that on them and that will.
I just use that on a long. It's like a 10-foot pole, and I put it halfway up the pole, and that bird wouldn't get. Near it, I don't think.
Okay. All right. For others' information, that stuff can get onto the bird feathers and cause them to mat, lose their insulation, waterproofing, and also may make it difficult for them to fly. So
right.
I would not recommend using the sticky stuff if at all avoidable.
Jim, thank you for the call. This email came in from our own front office, Dina Salzman.
Okay.
Wants to take you to task, Guthrie.
She
says,
go.
Birds do have a sense of smell. My friend does research entirely in this area. Dina has a very eclectic circle of friends. We featured his work with penguins on the Academic Minute. Well, there aren't that many penguins around in the WAMC listening area,
I'm going to have to, I'm just going to have to defer. And
Don't argue with Dina is like the number one rule really around here.
Is with the front office.
Yeah.
And penguins, I will accept that exception.
Okay, penguins.
Because I don't encounter penguins too often.
No. Have you ever encountered a penguin?
Negatory.
Okay, well, maybe
we'll
someday.
We'll have to fix that, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to the phones we go. That was an interesting email. Thank you, Dina. And let's go over to line 2. And Donnie in New Paltz. Donnie, you're on.
Hey.
Hey.
I just wanted to tell you, last summer... I was in Amityville at a marina, and there were I saw these.
Yeah, hello. Do we lose you, Donnie?
No.
Okay.
No.
You're deep in thought.
Myself.
Okay, man.
There were these.
Oh, hey ho, hey ho, ho ho. We gotta hit the dump button there. All right. Sorry about that, Donnie. We got it. We got the dump. All right. Yeah, he was lost in thought, and he said a bad word. No offense taken, Donnie. It's all right. So
okay.
Here are a couple that are on hold. And by the way, the number is 800-348-2551. A couple of questions for people who could not hold. Maureen Newberg says, how can I get rid of grackles that won't leave?
They'll leave.
What do you mean they'll leave?
They'll leave. Well, let's hope they'll leave. Grackles, I understand your frustration. Grackles are these large blackbirds, actually very purpley glossy, pretty bird with a bright yellow eye. And the males have this long, rather odd-shaped tail. They are they're moving through in hordes. They're moving north. They're migrating through the area, and they will descend on a backyard feasting on grubs on the lawn,
yeah,
or what's available at the bird feeders, and then off they go. Unfortunately, if you have a conifer tree nearby where they like to nest, well, welcome home or not.
Okay.
So once they decide that they like your backyard or your neighbor's yard, they're in for the duration.
Okay.
So, you know, it is as it is. They build nests, they raise babies, then they leave.
All right, but so encourage them to go to your neighbor's yard would be the thing to do, Maureen. All right, this one's from Gary, who could also was unable to hold. How can I stop woodpeckers pecking on my wood siding? Now, we've been through this before. There's two different types of pecking that goes on.
Right. What it is, why it is that they're working on the side of the house. If it is a territorial drumming, as we call it, where they'll sound out the acoustical territorial song.
Say, I am here. It doesn't matter whether it's wood; it could be metal siding or anything.
Right. If you're a female, you're welcome.
Right.
If you're another male, get lost.
Exactly.
And this is universal. It's the way they sing. However, if it is for other reasons, or trying to find food or building a nest, then we have a different problem, and that you'll need to find out what it is that's attracting them in there.
So we didn't really say the caller was on, was not on hold, and didn't say what type of siding. But if it's aluminum siding, you can be sure that there are not bugs in the aluminum siding.
And
but
that's probably
if it's wood
the
siding,
acoustical drumming.
Right.
And with that, if you can locate where their favorite sounding board is, you can muffle that with it's only a temporary phenomenon.
Right.
And if that begins to fail them, they'll find a better one that was more reliable,
yeah,
such as a mailbox or a hollow limb on a tree.
Sure.
Something that will do the job.
Good resonance.
Good resonance.
Yeah.
And so they'll cover that over with burlap, or as one person suggested, it may work for both instances, hardware cloth or chicken wire that will temporarily put up, so you can have.
I mean, you're going to put chicken wire up over the whole side of your house?
This is one of the suggestions that somebody had used, and it worked.
Okay.
Just locating the area where they're working.
Yeah.
And
so they won't just, if you block one section of your, say, your side wall, they won't just say, well, I'll just go to this section of the side
wall. Well, it depends on what the draw is. If it's insects, if there's termites in there, then you want to know about that.
Yeah.
They may be telling you you have a problem you need to address.
Yeah, right.
Carpenter ants or perhaps carpenter bees or the like.
Okay. The email address is voxpopwamc.org. The phone number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Over to David in Ballston Lake. Hello, David. You're on.
Thanks, guys. Hi, Rich.
Hello.
Rich, a lot of us are drawn this time of year to great blue heron rookeries as they set up housekeeping. And my question is, as you observe these over the course of time, one notices that these rookeries get abandoned and they move on. And it's often a mystery to me why that happens after a period of X number of years. Why do herons abandon their rookeries and move on?
Well, that's a good question, and one that I've observed as well. And it's a shame because, first of all, great blue herons are returning to the area right now, and they are setting up housekeeping in usually a flooded swamp where there are significant or an adequate number of dead trees. They like the tops of dead trees, the very tippy tops of dead trees, where they'll build this huge, ungainly stick nest where two very large birds will move in and raise two or three very large baby birds, that keep growing larger and larger until they finally fledge. So it's kind of a miracle of that these nests actually do the job, that they stand up there at the top of the tree, don't get blown away or topple over because of their weight or the occupants moving around, but it works. Yeah. But that may be why they move on, why they abandon a colony, and that the trees may become too far gone. They like a dead tree, and if it begins to break apart, rot away, and become less secure, it probably will happen in the whole swamp complex. All of those trees probably were flooded out at about the same time by a beaver dam or some other action. And so the each of the trees will become unsuitable all at once. So the heron colony will have to find another place.
Rich, I have a follow-up for you, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
I noticed last year in the heron rookery near me, which is in Ballston Lake, a young great-horned owl sitting in one of the nests. What is that about?
Well, great-horned owls are nesting now, and interesting thing about them is that they don't build their own nest.
Oh, really?
They will occupy the nest left over from the previous year from somebody else. Oftentimes, it will be a red-tailed hawk nest or perhaps a crow's nest, or, in this case, a great blue heron nest. So they will move in and make themselves right at home long before the herons come back. The great horned owl will set up their nesting territory back in January and start laying eggs in February, incubating them through March. And right about now, the young are hatched out and are very hungry. So it's not unusual. It's a good find to see a great horned owl nest on top of a tall tree in what was a heron colony. It's not as though they're going to get along, but every now and then those herons are going to have to watch out because great horned owls are very powerful and will go after nestlings in a heron colony nest. So they've got a meal just waiting for them. But the herons know that, and they'll be very guarded when it comes to protecting their young.
David, thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. It's Donald in Hyde Park. You're next.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you're on.
Thank you. I'm just wondering what could account for this influx of turkey vultures around my area. It's only in the last month I've noticed, like, lots of them circling around, and I never really saw it before. I'm just wondering why that might happen.
That's a good question. Turkey vultures are a huge bird that spends most of the time in the air. They have a remarkable flight pattern where they will just simply glide around, usually in circles, just picking up an air thermal, gaining altitude and sliding over to the next air thermal or wind current, using that. And without much effort, they very seldom flap their wings. Every now and then they do, just to catch up to a ripple in the air. But they spend a lot of time in the air. But right now, they're migrating through. A turkey vulture is kind of a newcomer in the area. It was years ago that I read in Henry Hill Collins that you knew you were crossing the Mason-Dixon line when you saw turkey vultures overhead. And now you could be crossing the Canadian border and be watching turkey vultures overhead. So the ones that are north of us are migrating through the area. They migrate in according to favorable conditions, and if it's favorable for one, it's favorable for all. And so they gather around whatever air current that is working. They're also pairing up and looking for their nesting territories. So when they do that, they will pair off two by two. They're not colonial, and so they will look for a place, and they'll disperse once this migration and courtship or mate search pattern is over. So it's not anything going on in your neighborhood. Now, the other possibility is that they found something. They eat carrion, and if there's a good morsel or something that they can locate, they will gather around that, but then move on.
Okay.
Okay, see, that's what I was worried about. There was, like, a lot of dead stuff around, but I don't really see any, like, deer or anything on the side of the road there, but...
No, well, it's usually not the case. But when they do find something, they will congregate around that, just as you've seen in the movies from the Serengeti.
Sure.
Same thing happens in New England, New York, New England. And usually the things that they find are not necessarily alongside the road. There's plenty of things that are out there, but that they can locate that you may not see from the highway.
Hey, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Before we take a break, a caller in a log home hangs tinfoil strips in front of windows, and it stops the woodpeckers from pecking at the house.
There you go.
How about that? You ever heard of that?
I have, and it works, especially you want to, if you live in a log home, you do want that to work.
Okay, so I don't understand why hanging, I mean, they're not going to bang on the windows. Why hanging foil on the windows
the
will stop the
reflection of the shimmering, the motion may be the deterrent to keep them from coming in.
Very interesting.
Well, maybe they have no interest there in the first place. Maybe the log home is secure and there's nothing to bring them in, food or sound. Mm. We found a better resonance board someplace else.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. We will take a break here. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support comes from George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region. 518-369-7994. The Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available. Skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Bodhi Spa Yoga and Salon Hudson, with a full-service hair care salon offering color cuts and blowouts, open daily, BodhiHolisticSpa.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches, ColbyService.com. And Steamer 10 Theater, presenting the final weekend of the cosmic comic melodrama First Contact, April 15th through the 18th. Times and ticket information at steamer10theater.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. I mentioned at the outset of the program that he is a famed after-dinner speaker, and I know you have some events coming up.
I do, actually, and it relates to my recent trip to Cuba.
Oh, yeah.
I had put together a very nice, what I think, anyway, it still needs to be field-tested, but we're going to go for it, program about my trip, the birds, the people, the cars and cigars of Cuba.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I think so.
That sounds like fun.
And I have three lined up right now. And also, I'll throw out an invitation if somebody has a group that they would like to hear this or see this little
doodad. How do they get in touch with you?
Easily enough. My email address is my name, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
So that's Guthrie is spelled...
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
All right, fine.
So and the middle initial is P as in Peter.
Right.
So Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com. So May 30th, I'm doing a program at the Singles Outreach Services at New Corner Road in Albany, New York, actually Colony, New York. And that's on May 30th, Memorial Day weekend. Then on June 2nd, at 6 p.m. at the Saugerties Public Library, at 6 p.m., Saugerties Public Library. And then on June 8th in the evening at the New Baltimore Conservancy, which is in New Baltimore, New York, at the firehouse at Gill Road.
Oh, great. So
you can find out about that by emailing me, or if you have an event that you want to, you know, your last speaker canceled out at the last minute,
right,
you need somebody to fill in. Hello.
Rich brings the thumb drive, and he's ready to go, as long as there's
drive,
a computer, right?
I just bring my thumb drive.
All right, fair enough. And so you workshop this for a few months and get it ready to go and get notes from people, and then you fine-tune the program, or is this all just, you just kind of just wrote this one afternoon and you're ready to go?
It took me many hours.
Really?
To put it together.
Oh, okay,
sure,
so you didn't just throw this together.
I took a lot of pictures in Cuba. You don't want to show too many pictures. You want to just get the story in there, make it happen, and then move on. You don't want to, you know, captive audience. Yeah. You don't want to keep them.
Well, I just want to make sure that people get their entertainment value out of this.
Well, then a song and a dance if there's not enough in the pictures.
Oh, really? You're going to do that?
Yeah, well, it depends.
And frankly, I'm not sure I want to see that. Let's go to Alan in Greenfield. Alan, you're on.
Hi. I had one solution for the woodpeckers, and that was throwing a handful of sand at them. That seemed to keep them off the house.
Sand.
Throwing a handful of sand.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Scared them away.
Is that something that you would recommend, Rich?
It'll probably work once or twice, but then I think they'll see you come out the door and they'll move on.
Well, okay. Fair enough. Well, so it would work, yeah.
Sneak up on them. That's correct.
Okay.
My question was about ring-necked pheasants.
Okay.
And why I don't see ring-necked pheasants anymore.
Well, ring-necked pheasants are not native to the area. They were brought in and released primarily for the hunting value of them. So it was a put-and-take proposition where they put them out and the hunters would take them. There was a limited amount of successful breeding, but not enough to sustain the population. So after they stopped stocking ring-necked pheasants, then they just simply disappeared through attrition.
Mm.
Now, a few hunt clubs will still put out ring-necked pheasants, and every now and then you'll come across one crossing the road way up in the Adirondacks or down in the southern part of the Catskills or Berkshires, but they're not native there, and the chances are, unless it finds itself a mate, she lays a clutch of eggs, they hatch, successfully hatch and survive, they'll just run out of time And that's, you know, they don't. Now, the turkey, on the other hand, the wild turkey had disappeared from the area and has made, as most folks know, a very successful comeback. So it works both ways. If they're not suited for the environment, they won't make it. If they are meant for the environment, here they come.
Okay. And what kind of environment are they looking for? Can I reintroduce them?
No.
No.
Many people have tried over decades and decades, and it simply does not work.
Okay.
They need China.
They need China.
North Korea. They need the Asian continent to survive.
Okay. All right. Well, Alan, thanks a lot. I'm sorry about that.
Not to be facetious about it, but
no.
That's basically it.
Okay.
I mean, whatever was suitable for them over there is not here, and so they're. Natural environment is not suitable here.
Okay. Lois in Huntington, you'll be next. Hang on just a minute. This is an email from Joe.
Joe.
And remember now, Dina Salzman in the front office, she took you to task about this whole birds
Joe.
Cannot, don't have a sense of smell. Well, this is from Joe. Some years ago in New Lebanon, I applied freshly ground acorns as a cover scent, and moments later I was surrounded in a thick, brushy edge by a flock of chickadees. There were perhaps 10, and one even landed on my hat brim to investigate the acorn pieces and powder. I have always assumed that they smelled the ground acorn. Ha-ha!
Well, that's a pretty rash assumption.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Joe's wrong?
Well, something happened, and the interpretation of what happened, well, it's open to some suggestions.
Okay, so you're still not buying this whole birds can sniff out the acorns.
Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Rich, don't get defensive. It's not 60 minutes. It's all right. Lois in Huntington, Mass., you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You have a very interesting show.
Oh, really?
I listen to it every time
you're on.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I wondered if you have heard of Rupert Sheldrake. He's a scientist in Great Britain, and he wrote a book in which he was talking about a lot of different kinds of behavior, and he described birds called the tit, and they were watching villagers' doorsteps. When the milkman would drop off their milk, they would go down and peck the cap and get it off and drink the milk.
Yep.
And it started in one little hamlet, and it spread like wildfire. All these different birds, not the different ones, but the tits, watched the others and then did it in their own village.
And this is very true. And that just goes to show that birds learn by watching. And
yes.
They learn from each other. If one of the birds discovers that a trick is working, the other birds that are in the area may notice this and may pick up on it and learn from that. We see that with, let's say, bird feeders.
Yes.
Many of our migrating finches, such as the goldfinches and the purple finch, moving through, and they will recognize a bird feeder in a yard and come spiraling down to help themselves and then move on. There's a lot of learning in that. And incidentally, the with the milk bottles in England. That has sort of gone away now that they stopped delivering milk to doorsteps. And it was the unhomogenized milk where the cream would be at the top.
Yeah.
And on and oftentimes it would actually push the top off the bottle, and the birds have learned that right underneath that little cap. So if they're impatient and don't want to wait for the cream to push the cap off, they'll take the cap off themselves.
Brilliant.
But that's pretty much, you know, that was a nice learned instance, probably unlearned by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thought that I'd bring that up because I found that fascinating, and the fact that they passed it along all the way in different hamlets, that was great.
Fascinating story, and yes, it's and there are other learned behaviors like that. A hummingbird will recognize hummingbird feeders readily because through the decades they've learned, which, by the way, hummingbirds are coming back, and now's a good time to clean up and put out the hummingbird feeders.
Yes, we're going to do ours this weekend. It's finally getting up to 70 degrees.
Lois, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. 800-348-2551. Okay, in the last instance, Lois mentioned these birds would learn to open the milk caps, and then ones in other hamlets did it as well. They would have to learn by watching, right?
Yes.
There's not a verbal sort of
community. Oh, no.
There's not a Jungian collective unconscious at work here.
You'll see this with birds that are not suited, let's say, for a bird feeder. You'll have the chickadees and the titmice and the nuthatches coming to a bird feeder, and a bluebird or a robin or a warbler will be looking and saying, what's the story over there? And they'll go check it out. Hmm. And it won't work for them. So every now and then, one of them will learn to, the Carolina wren, for example, will learn to help itself to some of the good food at the feeder.
How about that? All right, let's go back to the phones quickly here. And CJ in West Stockbridge. CJ.
Hi. Ray and Rich.
Hi.
Rich, I'm so happy you're on the show because I've had a question for you for a while.
Okay.
We just moved to a new house in December. And now that the robins are back, we have one robin who goes around to almost every window of our house every day and pecks on the window relentlessly. It just goes from window to window. It took us a while. At first it was alarming because we thought there was someone at the door because it's a very loud
noise. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I tried to talk the bird. You're hurting yourself. But then I realized he was not throwing himself at the window. He was pecking.
Right.
And I don't know if the previous owner had some kind of a relationship with this bird. It's really bizarre.
Well.
And I put drapes up and things so that it might deter the bird, but it's not. And my daughter has named him Marcus for some reason, but Marcus wakes us up in the morning.
Okay.
You know.
Well, what Marcus is trying to do is fight away another male that is intruding on his territory, which would be your yard. So he's only seeing a reflection of himself, but thinks it's another male. So the way to deter that is to cut down on the reflection that he's seeing. There's several ways of doing that. And after a while, he'll get over it and move on. But in the meantime, you want to just decrease the amount of reflective value on the glass. Not easy, but one way to do it is turn on the lights on the inside. There's not a mirror, a dark background.
Oh, yeah, you make a point, sure.
To make a
That's
mirror.
That's a really good point, because I did put drapes up.
Drapes on the inside may only increase the mirror factor of the glass.
Make the reflection stronger. So
you could put drapes on the outside, and that would work, but you don't want to do that.
Wow.
Or maybe I do.
Okay.
You know, CJ, you're my kind of people. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for your help.
Okay.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Kara in Lowell, Mass. Kara, you're on. Did I hit the button? Is Kara there? Oh, you are.
Actually, it's Tara.
Hi, Kara. Oh, Tara. I'm sorry. You're on.
Hi. I have a question about the woodpecker situation. I've had a woodpecker come every year for the past 3 years, and he keeps pecking at the side of my house, and he's creating holes. I was told that there's burrowing bees that are attacking my house, and, you know, they burrow behind and they lay their larva, and the woodpeckers come and they try to peck at the larva. So I've spent the money to try to have somebody come and get rid of the larva, and the woodpecker keeps coming back, and we filled the holes, and he kind of gets through the holes again, and I'm kind of, I heard you say that the reflection of the tinfoil would help, but is there any other thing I can do besides putting a bunch of tinfoil all over my house?
Well, there, if in your instance, it sounds like they're interested in the larvae that are in the wood.
Right.
Right. And I've had exterminators come, and, you know, it costs $400 for them to do what they do, and it doesn't seem to have worked.
No, because the wood is what's attracting the boring insect, which is probably carpenter bees.
Yeah.
And a deterrent for carpenter bees is what will work as a deterrent for the woodpeckers. And, you know, unfortunately, the carpenter bees will come and go and pick a spot. You can't predict where they will be. So I'm going to have to look into this.
Okay.
And next time I'm on with Ray.
All right. So that's your homework.
Yeah. We'll see what I don't know what's in the cookbook out there for that sort of infestation of carpenter bees.
Yeah, because I was noticing that at first we're like this woodpecker, and it just all the time is pecking. And then I started noticing little holes in like the upper part of my you know, the outside. And so I sat out there and just like watched and see what was going on. And I noticed that the bees were coming and they were burrowing. And so I kind of just went online and looked it up, and they said that, you know, the woodpecker could be going after the larva. So
They recognize that as a meal. And I presume that the carpenter bee looks like a humongous bumblebee.
Yeah.
If it's one of the other bees, such as honeybees, you can get a beekeeper to come. And I have a good source for that. If you do have honeybees, if it's yellow jackets, well, then that's a different problem.
Yeah.
Nobody wants them, and you don't want them, and you want to get rid of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the carpenter bees.
Oh, okay.
They're making these perfect little round holes all around my house.
That's the thing.
They're the guys. So it sounds like it's a big problem and not an easy solution. But I'll work with you on that. Well, you might contact the cooperative extension people in your county and see if they have something that they could recommend.
All right, Tara, thanks a lot for the call. Quickly over to Chris in Chicopee. Chris, you only have about 25, 30 seconds.
Okay, I have a hint for you. I have a thistle feeder right outside my window, and I went to the local Mr. Tint, the guys who do the tinting on car windows, and bought a piece of plastic to put inside. And the birds can't see into the house, and the cat can be inside whamming on the window, and it doesn't disturb them.
Oh, interesting. So you tinted the windows?
Kind of, yeah. It's just a sheet of plastic that I put on the inside of the storm window, so the birds can't see what's going on at the window. And the feeder is about 8 inches from the window.
Okay, that's a working tool. And
The
question is, from the outside, if you see a reflection, might that the birds also see the reflection? So with the robin defending its territory instance, that may or may not be the solution. But as far as not disturbing the birds at the feeders, good trick.
Brilliant.
Yeah, the cats are having a great time, and the birds aren't disturbed by it at all.
Terrific.
Cats indoors. We love you.
Chris, thanks for the call.
Absolutely. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yep. Chris will be the last one today. Rich, well done today.
Thank you. We had, I thought it was fun. So richardpguthrie@gmail.com if you need a program speaker, Birds at Cuba.
Okay. And the blog once again?
Oh, the blog is timesunion.com, birding.
Okay. Well, Rich Guthrie, we'll see you next time. Support comes from Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park. Relax, play, wander, and discover 44 lakes, 44 choices. Full calendar at 44lakes.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. WaterwheelVillage.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. And Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Edward Bike, picturing the American Revolution, juxtaposing a 20th century view of the Revolutionary War with 18th century portraits. Arkellmuseum.org. Falling apart here at the end of the program. All right, that's it. Thanks to Rich Guthrie. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Thanks to you at home for listening and for calling. Thanks to Deb Malik for answering the phones. Thanks to our producer, the affable Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. That was great, Rich. You were good. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. And that's...
Spring's in the air. Friday is Food Friday.
That's right. Stay tuned now for news.